You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful night, and thank you so much for tuning in and supporting all that we're doing here on the podcast. It's been amazing. You guys have been amazing out there checking us out and subscribing and downloading, and it's just a real pleasure. Of course, I'm your host, Brent Thomas. This is the Paranormal Portal podcast, and once again, special thanks to Revolver Podcast for making all this possible. It started when I was about 7 years old. It was around midnight, and I was thirsty, so I went downstairs to get a glass of water, and I had just fixing to go down the stair when a hand shot out of the darkness and grabbed me by the throat. Yikes. I stood there with his hand clasped tightly around my throat for what seemed like ages. Finally, the hand let go, and I ran back to my bedroom, got under the covers, and pulled them over my head. The next day, I told my parents about what happened, and they said that it was just imagining things and shouldn't watch scary movies before I go to bed. That same night, I told my parents about what had happened. I was being punched and prodded by the thing that had grabbed me. The next day, my mom saw the bruises I got and asked my brother why he had been hitting me. He said no, and that he had never been hitting me, and told her he had been seeing strange lights in front of my bedroom and would hear my name being called out at night when he went to use the bathroom. The next day, when my brother and I were playing outside in the woods, we saw a row of 5 or 6 tombstones, and we ran to the house and showed our parents, and they believed us after that, and we moved out of the house 3 months later. To this day, I think the ghost has followed me because I still wake up with strange bruises and hear my name being called out at night. Well, that's all kinds of creepy and wrong. I would suggest a dream catcher or something. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if dream catchers are necessarily functional against negative spirits, but I don't know what's going on there. That's terrible. If you're getting hit and hurt, then there's something really wrong. That's horrible. Do you want to know something weird? Now, that's the ghost sensor. So that actually sensed spirits in the room. Honest to God, and I'm not fabricating this at all. I'll put this on everything I love. I just saw a dark ball past my monitor go up and then disappear behind my monitor. True story. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't need to fabricate stuff. I know that sounds absolutely incredulous and wild to some people, but I swear to you, it's true. I wouldn't waste the time saying it if it wasn't true. I have plenty of things to read to entertain you with. I don't need to fabricate things. But at the same time that went off, I had just seen this ball go up and disappear. So apparently, there may very well be something here. I don't know. Again, I'm not really convinced that this thing does much of anything. I don't know what it does. It's, you know, from time to time, it's been really interesting that it spits out weird stuff once in a while. And it seems sometimes to make sense to what's going on. Like even the timer, like, you know, I was monologuing a little bit and, you know, maybe it's trying to give me a hint to move on. But, you know, that truly did go off. That's the sound you heard. It's just a sound effect. That's not a spirit sound at all. It's just a sound effect of the application saying, we detect a presence. Now, I suppose they felt they needed to make it a really spooky, creepy sound. And that's, you know, that is what it is. But I did actually see a ball just prior to that happening. True story. Hand to God. What does it mean? I don't know. It's been weird around the studio lately anyway. I still haven't saged, like fully saged. And I know I need to just to knock the energy down a bit. But again, I think doing a paranormal show, and I know I've said this a bunch recently, so just bear with me, but I'm just reiterating, doing a paranormal show, you're constantly speaking about a phenomena. You're constantly speaking about things that are beyond the normal, you know, hence the name paranormal. But I do believe in a sense that creates a magnetization of sorts. So in other words, in the universe, the one universal law is that energy follows intention. I mean, there's many universal laws, but that's a foundational universal law, that energy follows intention. Hence, if you're thinking really crappy thoughts about somebody, that energy is going to them and maybe creating a crappy experience for them or creating more animosity towards you. It's just the way it works. So, and that's one of the reasons that people are encouraged to speak kindly about your enemies or pray for your enemies or whatever you want to use. And that way you're negating that negative reflection because all of it is somewhat karmic. In other words, when you're talking totally garbage about somebody, it may feel better to let it out, but ultimately what's happening is it's going to them in some form or another, and on some level, they're not liking you even more, you know, and they may be sending more crap your way by them thinking about you. So constantly this happens. So in terms of talking about the paranormal, I'm constantly referring to it. I'm constantly thinking about it and sharing ideas and thoughts, things that occur to me as I'm doing the show. That creates an energy, you know, that's maybe somewhat of a beacon, for lack of a better term. And perhaps they just follow it because they know that there's a discussion going on about, you know, their condition. That's just a hypothesis, but I think there might be something to that. In fact, one of the old ancient tenets of occult practice was magnetism. And magnetism was the idea. And it's even brought up now in The Secret? The Secret is just basically a rehashing of a lot of old principles in spirituality dealing with magnetizing yourself for things to come to you. It's just a 21st century or 20th century revision of that same principle. Nothing new has come up, but it's good stuff. I mean, it's still relevant and has helped a bunch of people. But essentially, when you create things, it's even to the point of, I know it's Monday tomorrow. It's just going to be a crappy day. It's always a crappy day on Monday. Well, guess what? I'll pretty much guarantee you Monday's going to be crappy if that's what you're sending out. So that energy will follow intention. You will manifest based on that. So, you know, I think that as we do the show, we do manifest an attraction for that stuff. Nothing creepy, nothing horrible, nothing weird. Oh, well, maybe weird, but you know what I'm saying. But I've just seen this happen way too many times in the years that I've been doing this show that just strangeness comes out of nowhere. Excuse me. Sorry. So the next story, ladies and gentlemen, is coming from Oregon. What's going on in Oregon? Well, let's find out. For several years now, I've been plagued by nights of horrible dreams. Well, here's where the dream catcher comes in that just came up. I just flippantly made a remark about a dream catcher. And now we got a horrible dream story. So many reoccurring with the same thing in common. Ghosts. They always scare me so much, and I often wake up crying and drenched in sweat. The houses that I'm in my dreams are always different, but there are many similarities in my dreams. First of all, I'm always with other people, usually my friends. It's at a house party situation. Secondly, the ghost always haunts only one room. and everyone present knows about the room and the ghost and they avoid it. Yet we talk about it when we're together and the strange things that happen because of the ghost. Thirdly, I always end up alone in the room where the ghost haunts at some point. I've never seen the ghost, but I always feel the oppression and evil that it emits. I should say that she emits because the ghost is always a female. I don't know if it's always the same ghost, but I'm always get the same feelings of dread and fear when I'm alone. Another similarity in my ghost dreams is when I'm alone in the haunted room, I always try to get out, but I can't. I'm trapped. I call for my friends, but it's like they've left me alone in this haunted place. My dreams have yet to progress to any harm because to me, any harm caused to me rather by the ghost. And I feel this is due to the fact that I am so scared and uncomfortable that I force myself awake. And sometimes when I fall back to sleep, I go right back to where I've left off. Oh, that's horrible. I usually have a dream like this at least once a month, and I can't understand why. Who is this ghost woman, and why am I so afraid of her? Why don't I fight her in my dreams? Why don't I try to figure out what's going on? And why does it frighten me more than anything else I've ever experienced in real life or in other nightmares? Now, that's kind of peculiar because today I was just having a discussion. Well, I commented on a discussion on a page. A friend of mine was talking about working a hypothesis about astral projection during dreams, that we always astrally project. And my comment was, well, you know, there's been a lot of spiritual teachers that have made that claim that every time we dream, we're actually projecting. It's just that sometimes where we're projecting to just doesn't seem like, you know, what we actually recognize in our waking mind. And so this person could very well be projecting in this dream, and that's maybe what's going on, is they're projecting into a place, and the place may look different, but it's the same place. And they're having the same experience because perhaps, you know, there are a lot of stories about astral projection and there being entities that do try to trap people. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. I just don't have much of an opinion, I guess, myself about that, but I've heard those claims. Is it possible? I suppose it is. I don't know. There's no way to know everything, ladies and gentlemen, but you know, at least it is interesting. This person has the same dreams about a ghost, a female ghost, and always ends up alone. And maybe that's when all the, you know, the other manifestations of their mind are stripped away, and finally they have to confront this one thing. Could it be psychological? Sure, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense psychologically. It's just an exercise of an unconscious mind working through stuff. Maybe the woman represents some kind of issue in their life that they're not dealing with. I don't know. But could it be spiritual? Sure. Could it be psychological? Sure. It's just no fun either way. And it requires the person to definitely make some changes. So interesting story, though. All right. My computer's just being really sluggish. Sorry. All right, next one. Oh, now this one sounds really interesting. And it's coming from the Louisiana. Seen UFO in 1977. Good to see that, Renee. You did? Okay. Renee was 11. Very cool. It says, us neighbor kids were playing outside summertime up in sky. We saw a UFO. Curfew at 11. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I'm with you. I've seen that stuff too, at least once, but possibly several other times. Only really, really up close and personal once, but it was close enough. It was close enough that I was like, okay, I've had enough of this. It's real. I know it's real. I'm going to bed. But very cool, Renee. Thanks for sharing that in the chat. I don't know if that was necessarily for me to share in the air, but if you say it in chat, it's coming on the show. That's it. All right, so let's see what's going on here. I get kind of transfixed on the chat. Like, what am I missing? All right, let's go to Louisiana and see what's going on here. Now, this one does sound cool. There's a mention of a djinn, which I find really peculiar. Of course, djinn are from the Islamic religion, and they are magical beings that apparently predate the creation of people. In fact, they were perhaps God's first creation in the Islamic religion. So, but they are apparently, well, they're sometimes negative, they're sometimes positive, they're sometimes they're just neutral. But they, if they don't like people, they really, really don't like people. So they can be absolutely demonic, or they can be absolutely angelic, or absolutely indifferent. All right, so he says, blah, blah, blah. Okay, all of these encounters happened in my younger days, but I'm almost always had a witness. When I was younger, I used to spend my weekends at my cousin's house. During one of my first visits there, he said to me, "Weird stuff happens here around 12 a.m. I really didn't believe him, but at 12:04, I had my first ghost, and then in parentheses, jinn encounter." Okay, so they're just translating a ghost experience as a jinn. Not necessarily that it is a jinn, it's just their interpretation. The living room layout had a kitchen door behind and to the right of the couch. In the kitchen, there was a cabinet with a glass front that reflected the whole kitchen. And during that time, we heard a cabinet door open and shut, and then we heard a bunch open and shut over and over. But we were looking at the reflection and saw absolutely nothing moving. We hopped over the couch and ran into the kitchen to find nothing moving, and the noise had finally stopped. That's not the best story in the world, but it was my first, and I actually had a witness. One other one was shorter, and it involved a friend of mine at my grandmother's house. Her house is old, so the floors creak, and the kitchen is beside the living room, almost the same room. And one night, we were laying on two separate couches and talking to each other when we heard footstep creaks walking into the kitchen. We thought it was her, so we said, "Hey, Grandma, hey." But we didn't get any reply, and no light ever came on. We then looked up, and nobody was there. The last one I'm going to say is my best one, besides another one that I had already posted. And one night, we were at my same grandmother's house. My cousin, apparently his name Chance, from above, and my other cousin, Marcus, are the people in the story. There's a vacant trailer that is beside my grandmother's house, and at the time, I lived in it, sadly. We were young and wanted to check it out at night, and Marcus went in first, and Chance went in second, and then I trailed. I was the lookout in case anyone came. On the way towards the back, past the kitchen, is my room, and then my sister's room, and Marcus went to the far back towards my sister's room, and Chance walked my room and found an old train toy. He opened my door and threw it in the closet and threw it in and closed the door. I was almost behind him at the time, and we decided nothing was going on, so we were going to leave. And on our way out, Chance passed my old door, and then that time the door opened and the toy flew past his head. We freaked out and took off running and didn't go back in there at night ever again. I still feel weird going in there sometimes. I believe it's more of a djinn messing with us than anything. Okay, so that's interesting. And again, sometimes djinn are just interchangeable terms for ghosts as well. I don't know. I guess it's just a cultural understanding of it, but interesting nonetheless. All right, from South Carolina comes another one. A couple days ago, I dreamt about a girl that I went to school with that is now deceased. In my dream, there were a ton of people in the building, and I felt like I knew them all, yet I didn't recognize them. Different people would come up to me and start talking, and then the girl that I knew came up, and she asked me how I was doing, and said she hadn't seen me in a while, and we talked for a little bit. I asked her where she's been and what she's been up to, and she said she has been working on her family. Then a boy came up to me and started talking to me and gave me a hug. He looked so much like my husband's deceased cousin that I had never met, and the whole time I was with him, he was so nice to me, and it felt like I knew him as well, but I didn't know who he was. Near the end of the dream, he gave me another hug and told me that he would see me again really soon. I don't know why I had that dream. I have a lot of weird dreams that usually mean something, and most of the time, they don't make a whole lot of sense until later. Sorry. Sometimes they're written really poorly, so I got to piece them together. What I would like to know is if anyone else has had the same kind of thing happen to them. Do any of you ever have dreams about someone deceased, or even just a dream that means something? I know that my mom's friend and my dad experience this kind of thing all the time, so at least I know that I am not dealing with this completely alone. I'd have to say yes. I've had quite a few of those. And they're really cool. I've never had a bad one of those. They've always been really good. So very cool. All right. So that was South Carolina. Continuing our tour across the face of the nation here. We're going to North Carolina, ladies and gentlemen, a little bit north into the north of Carolina. This one's not too long. The experience happened to me in the early 90s. I thought I was talking about an age. I was like, wow. I'd been dating a girl that had once been involved in witchcraft. And at the time, I was living alone in an apartment. And the apartment had hardwood floors throughout, so you could definitely hear if someone was walking in another room. I always had an eerie feeling like I was being watched, but would just dismiss it as much as possible. One night I went to bed as usual, having set my alarm clock for 6 in the morning in order to get up for work, and the alarm clock was facing the bed so I could see it at all times. A noise brought me out of a deep sleep and into a semi-conscious state, enough for me to see the clock and know that what the time was, and it was exactly 1:01 a.m., and I remember thinking, great, I got 5 more hours of sleep. I like those. And I always sleep on my side in the fetal position. And on this occasion, my left hand was hanging off the bed. At that instance, I hear footsteps coming through the house, sounding like my girlfriend's boots she always wore, getting closer and closer. Then whatever it was started speaking to me in her voice, trying to convince me that it was her. And I remember trying to move, but I was completely paralyzed and couldn't. I spoke back saying, no, you're not. I kept on until it finally reached my bed, speaking sweetly in her voice. My bedroom door was closed, so it had come right through it, and I could still see the clock. Keep in mind, but I could not see my uninvited guest, and there was a brief moment of silence. And then I started feeling the bed move behind me, and I said one more time, you're not Kelly. At that instant, I felt a hot breath on my ear, and the voice changed from her voice into a man's and said, how did you know? That's when I finally snapped out of it and jumped out of bed, nearly peeing myself, and ran over to the light switch and turned it on, along with every other one in the house. There wasn't anything there, and it had come and gone in a minute, but what had seemed an eternity. Like I said, the whole time I was desperately trying to move, but was frozen in terror. Some people would simply say that it was just a dream, but I'm here to tell you that this was definitely not a dream. Needless to say, shortly thereafter, I stopped seeing her. Like it was her fault. A few years later, I had another experience that I will share at another time. Wow. Well, that's too bad. I wonder why he broke up with her. You know, I like dating you, but I don't really like when you send demons after me. Creepy. Okay, the next one, ladies and gentlemen, this one's coming out of California. California dreaming. It was about 2003, and I was sitting in my room. I was doing homework and talking on the phone with my best friend, and I heard someone knocking on my door, rather, and I looked out, but nobody was there. I left my door open and stared at it, and a few minutes later, I saw a transparent sneaker. It was really weird and only had one leg attached to it. And ever since then, we have taken pictures and orange streaks of light in my parents' room. And sometimes I hear scratching on my window at night. And when I'm by myself, I see stuff run across the living room. It happened a number of times and still freaks me out. And every time I watch a scary movie, I see the sneaker and severed leg, and I see streaks of light fleet across my room, kitchen, and living room. My house gets cold in the eerie at nighttime, and one time I was outside and I saw a transparent tiger jump out of my tree. I don't know. This one's kind of hokey. And sometimes when my dad takes a shower, like today, the water gets cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, and keeps doing that, and it freaks me out. And sometimes I see over my shoulder when I look in the mirror, I see something over my shoulder when I look in the mirror, and it scares me. My house is haunted. My brother always is looking at the spot where I see the ghost, and he cries and clenches onto me and my dad, and I see it all the time now. I don't know, maybe I was good until he started talking about the tiger. It's like, all right, we just went right to Disney on this one. I don't know. I guess they could look like tigers if they wanted to, but I don't know. That's a little weird. A little weird for me, just saying, ladies and gentlemen. I do actually have a bit of a criteria for my ghost stories, and generally they don't look like tigers very much. Trip down to Texas, shall we? All right. I really have some strange friends, but being Texans, we tell good stories. And my friend Lori considers herself to be a sensitive, and I admit she's had some experiences and has experienced some of the weirdest things during her life. And I've been fortunate enough to have heard her tales. Man, I don't know. My tongue was gumming up on that one. One of Lori's friends was getting married at a rather famous old mansion here in Fort Worth called Thistle Hill House. This magnificent 11,000-foot square house is beautiful and was built for a woman named Electra Wagoner. I think I know of this house. And it was built by her father, A.B. Wharton, in 1903 for a sum total, get this, $46,000. At that time, that was a fortune, I guess, but wow, you can hardly buy a moped but for $46,000 now. Man, a fortune at the time. Well, there you go. But he was a cattle baron, and excess was the game. The story is that AB built the house for Electra so she would wait on getting married to take care of her motherless younger siblings until they were old enough to leave the house on their own. Electra took up old dad on his offer and raised her siblings in exchange of this house built to her specifications. Don't worry, Electra did eventually get married and didn't die alone. Regardless, this house is gorgeous and the perfect setting for a grand wedding, if you can afford it. Seriously, go to Google and type Thistle Hill, Fort Worth, Texas, and it should pull up the house's website. And you can see the insanely beautiful rooms. It was very classy. And Lori was at this house for a wedding, and they allow the brides to use the upstairs bridal room to change and get ready for their big moments. Lori had helped her friend get ready for the wedding, and the bridal party moved downstairs to prepare for the ceremony. The bride forgot her veil in the upstairs dressing room and asked Lori to go back upstairs to retrieve it prior to the ceremony starting. I believe that Lori was the bridesmaid, and I'm very sure because this was in the 1980s, and that she was she was looking hot in a bright orange taffeta. I don't know what taffeta means, T-A-F-F-E-T-A. She hosts a nightmare bridesmaids ball every year and tells everyone invited to wear their most horrid bridesmaids outfits just for funsies. Lori went back upstairs and past the parlor room to the right of the bridal dressing room, and a woman in 1900s period dress stepped out of the parlor and dipped her head, hello, at Lori and continued down the hallway towards the staircase. Lori just assumed that the woman was a character actor hired by the household to show authenticity. After Lori's friend's beautiful wedding took place and the reception was underway, Lori saw the proprietor of the building and she walked over and said that she enjoyed the character actor dressed in period clothing. And the proprietor looked really puzzled and said, they don't have anyone like that working in the building, especially not during a wedding. Lori then told the proprietor what she had seen when she went back up the stairs, and the proprietor smiled and said, well, it might have been Elektra. Apparently Elektra likes to greet guests at the house and to attend weddings. Lori thought that this was great fun and continued to have a wonderful time at the wedding. Well, there you go. That's a nice story. I don't know. I wonder why Elektra's hanging out at the house instead of getting on with it, but maybe she just loves the house that much. Okay, so the next story, ladies and gentlemen, is coming from Georgia. This takes place on August 28th, 1998, and I had been back in Atlanta for a month and had transferred from Maryland with my job and was thrilled to be home with my family and friends. The previous year had been a tough one. I lost a job, and Rob and I had finally called it quits, and I was still trying to sell a house in Maryland, so Mom was nice enough to let me stay with her for the time being. And it was the back-to-school season at work, and I had been working long and very late hours. My district manager had asked if I would work the Alpharetta store, which is a large volume store, and she felt I was experienced enough to be able to handle the crowds. And from the moment I started at this store, I felt like everything was out of control. We didn't have enough employees, and we didn't have enough time during the day to search for people, and we were desperately trying to keep enough merchandise on the floor to satisfy the throngs of students heading back to school. The general manager had also transferred from Maryland, and she understood my anxiety and frustration with this new store. The night of the incident, I had the closing shift, and she came to me and asked if I had a plan to recover the store. I told her that we would stay until we were back in shape and ready for work tomorrow, and we left at around 12 a.m. and the store was in fair condition. I walked out with Jamal, and I thanked him for all of his help, and then I got in my car and drove home. The drive home was really uneventful, but I had a feeling that I was being followed. And when I turned on Sheridan, the feeling was really strong, but I was almost home, so I ignored ignored my better judgment. Sorry, another cough. And I pulled into the driveway. Those feelings went away, and all I could think was, I need to sleep. I opened the door of the car and got out and was immediately confronted by a man dressed in all black, pointing a gun at my face. I screamed, but then I decided I didn't want Mom to wake up and come out. I didn't want her to get hurt, and she might make things worse, so I became quiet, and he told me to come with him. At first, I thought he wanted me, but then he told me that we were going back to the store and that I was going to open the safe for him. I was calm knowing that all he really wanted was money, and I was also calm by the fact that there was another presence or entity with me helping me through this. My dad had passed away in 1993, but I knew that he was still there watching over Mom, and he was angry that this was happening at his house, and I could feel his anger. And at one point, he took a swing at the guy with the gun, and then he stayed with me through the whole evening. The first man put me in the back seat of an old Camaro or a Firebird, and then he grabbed my car keys and took off. I was worried that he'd go into the house and hurt Mom, and I was also upset because I had an old church key that belonged to Dad on that key ring, and Dad sat next to me and held my hand. And the second man told me we were going back to the store and nothing would happen to me if I was all really cooperative. I was worried about Mom, so I started talking to the driver and asked why he took my keys. And he told me that they needed to dump the car we were in and they were going to take my car. And I asked if they had plans to go into the house. And I was assured that all they wanted was the car. And I could feel Dad assure me that everything would be okay. We got to the store and the man opened the door and grabbed my arm and told me to come with him. He had a gun pointed at my ribs and he told me not to look at him. I had lost a contact lens in the back seat of the car, so I couldn't see much anyway. Dad followed me and kept telling me to stay calm and this would be over soon. The man told me to unlock the store and then he directed me to the alarm panel. He wanted me to not to do anything stupid because he would use the gun if he needed to. I turned the alarm off and then he directed me to the cash office and he told me to open the safe. And he also wanted all the laptops in our lockup area. He told me to unlock that room too, and I did what he asked, and he handed me a canvas bag and told me to open the safe and put in all the money in the bag. I opened the top of the safe and put all the bills and some rolled up coins in the bag, and what the robber didn't know was that most of the cash was in the bottom of the safe, and I had no intention of opening it unless he demanded it. He then took the bag and tied my hands and feet together and told me to lay down on the floor and that he would be back. The minute he left, I jumped up and hobbled to the door and slammed the door closed. He couldn't get in the cash office without the key. I then was able to wiggle out of the tape in my hands and set off the alarm. Dad stayed with me the whole time. I called the police and I called my GM and DM to let them know I was okay, and when I got home at about 4 a.m. that morning, I told Mom about Dad being with me throughout the whole ordeal, and she wasn't surprised, nor did she think it was crazy or delusional. She knows he watches her, and she feels his presence too. She feels that he wants to make up in death for what he was not able to give us in life. For me, he has given me more in that one night than I ever could ask. Thanks, Dad. I love you. That's a cool story. What a wonderful thing, you know, that these people who love us and pass over may still be right there, just out of sight, you know, shielding us. What a beautiful thought. I think there's a lot of that going on, ladies and gentlemen. All right, this one's pretty short. So New York is our destination on this story, ladies and gentlemen. All right, it's Christmas in 1991 in Buffalo, New York. Family from all over different states are celebrating the holiday at my parents' house, which I will mention is the same house my mother grew up in. I go upstairs to get my pajamas on, and something catches the corner of my eye. I look in front of the bathroom door and see a man. He only appears from the chest up. He isn't solid, but isn't transparent either. He's wearing a leather aviator jacket, glasses, and a wool cap with the ear flaps pulled down. He's old. Being only 11 years old, I bolt down the stairs and don't mention a thing, nor do I explain why I'm going to sleep at 8 p.m. when my 4-year-old cousin was told to go to bed. She shared my room during her visit. Flash forward to some time over Christmas break that same year, and I'm looking at old family photos with my brother, and I come across a photo of that same man I saw a week earlier in my room. I ask Mom who he is, and she tells me he is my great-grandfather. I ask where he lives, and she tells me that he passed away a few days after I was born. I don't know why he popped in, and now I feel a bit bad for running away. But hey, I was 11 years old, but it makes sense now. All the family is together in the old house. He had been there and he was alive, and I suppose he was just checking in on me. He was the first ghost I ever saw, but not the last. So you see a ghost and you're all freaked out, and then you come across a photo of that very same person and you find out it's family, and then it's like, oh, that's kind of cool now. Before it was really creepy, but No, that was Grandpa? Okay, I'm good with that. I think that's nice. All right, Michigan, what's going on there? Last month, my family and I went to Michigan to see the Paulding Light. It's real. When my mom parked our car to see to the view of the light, that big bright light seemed to zip right down on the power lines. It was so cool. Okay, that was a really poorly written sentence, but I got through it. I took a camera photo of it and recorded it on our video camera, and when the light starts to race on the power lines toward us, literally, it chased us. Man, it scared the heck out of us. Now, when it comes to scare a 17-year-old, that's pretty hard. But this spooked the devil out of me. In that same location. Yep. In that same location again. I didn't see anything this time, though. But that's where the ghost radar was saying. Right over there. Huh. No words, though. You got to say something so we know what's going on. Who are you? Why are you here? All right. So where was I? The scary light chased him. Now, when it comes to scare a 17-year-old, that's pretty hard. But this spooked the devil out of me. And when I first saw it, I thought it was an orb. But people say it's the ghost of a little boy searching the tracks high and low for his sister's head that was beheaded from the train running over her, killing both of them. That's creepy. As the light started to chase us, you could hear its vibration and feel them. We ran to the car and drove home, not looking back. But what is it? What is it that makes the light truly stay there? Sometimes when I see things like ghosts or orbs, they stay here with unfinished business. I wish somehow that we could make that thing go away. But why did it chase us? Why is it a light and not a ghost of the boy instead? I need help. Why? Seriously, though, it really did spook me, and it reminded me of... What? It reminded me of Casper the Friendly Ghost, except it wasn't friendly. Well, I'm not sure what's going on here, but I guess they went to see some naturally occurring light phenomenon, and they actually saw it. And since it came their direction, their understanding of that was that it was actually chasing them, but it just could be a residual thing that just follows that same path. And it has nothing to do with you. You just happen to be there. I don't know. It's anybody's guess. All right, where are we going now? We're going to California. This one's pretty short. I had went to Sunnyvale, California, to visit their Toys R Us store. I'm a ghost hunter, and I went there with three of my cousins, Jess, Kayla, and Sierra. We went inside the store to buy some stuff to show the family, and when we would go back to Utah, and as I went through the doll aisle, a doll came out of its package and landed on the floor right beside me. By itself, no joke. I was shaking all over. I ran to see my cousins and told them exactly what happened, and they just thought I was goofing around, but they soon realized for themselves that it wasn't. The store manager saw us group of girls and all freaked out and clumped together, and the manager said, "Johnson, these girls were only here to buy." Sorry about him. Johnson haunts this store ever since they built the store over the land where his homeland was. Some say he died by an axe in his thigh, but who knows? A ghost? Does he stay here? Yep. Just a warning, don't go through the Play-Doh aisle. Enter at your own risk. But, you know, Johnson isn't the only ghost here. There's a group of them with him, and don't go upstairs where the camera room is. We stood in front of the Play-Doh aisle, and I took a picture with my camera. It was amazing. An example of... Oh, I'm not going to click an example. But Johnson the ghost wasn't leaning against the wall. Why do ghosts stay here with us? Well, to find that out, you'll have to watch some of my old episodes. Because I'm not going through that laundry list again. Not so soon, anyway. All right, there's one more story then. I'll get through one more story tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Then we'll call it a night because the portal is waning. It's about to close. We can't be trapped in it. All right, so Texas is where we're off to now. And it says, I really believe in the paranormal. However, I've never had a negative experience until just last night. I can't recall ever feeling so scared and absolutely helpless. I'd been up and down all night, and we just got a new puppy that I have to get up with approximately every 2 hours. After waking up one time, I went back to sleep. The whole experience began as if a dream. In the beginning of the dream, I'd gone outside to take the dog out. It was totally different house, surroundings, etc. And as I looked to the left, I saw that I had apparently scared someone off, as there was a lit cigarette sitting on the corner of the house to my left, held by I don't know what. It wasn't on the ground. It appeared as if it was being held by a bracket sort of thing. I started getting scared at that time. I went back inside. This is still the dream. And I'm not sure what happened then. This is where it gets really scary. I was in bed. My husband was beside me, sound asleep. He's a real hard sleeper. And I was laying face down. Yet I could hear noises, not loud, maybe like a shuffling going on around me. And I remember feeling at first as if there was one person, but shortly after, I realized there were two. I remember feeling like I had been drugged and I couldn't wake up, move, or scream. It was so vivid. I remember fighting to wake up, and I remember trying to make some sound and eventually trying with all my strength to scream, and I couldn't make any sound. There were times that I was able to wake up, and in one of these, I put my arm around my husband's waist, and I was still on my stomach. The consciousness didn't last long at all. When it did come, after this, I was trying so hard to move my arm or fingers to wake my husband up, but nothing would move. And again, I couldn't wake up or scream, and I would occasionally hear things around me. And I remember thinking that my husband and I had both been drugged, like the scene in that movie What Lies Beneath, where Harrison Ford has drugged Michelle Pfeiffer and puts her in the bathtub and turns the water on. The only difference was that she had her eyes open, and despite all my effort, I couldn't open my eyes. I can remember thinking that they had really drugged my husband so he wouldn't realize what was going on and were leaving him alone. And I remember thinking to myself that whenever I had encountered spirits in the past, none had been aggressive. There were a few times I was able to fight off the fatigue, and I was eventually able to wake my husband up enough to tell him to save me and that two ghosts were trying to get me. Him being a non-believer that he is told me that I needed to tell them to go away. He didn't seem to realize that I was petrified. I'd been fighting this for what seemed like forever, and each time I was scared to go back into the catatonic state, but couldn't fight it off. The one time that I was successful in getting my husband's attention, he got up and went to the bathroom, came back, and we laid facing each other with our arms around each other, and I remember feeling the energy behind my back and repeatedly flinching like they were trying to take me away from my husband. I guess they eventually left because I was able to go to sleep feeling like it was safe. That's interesting. So that's a kind of a sleep paralysis thing. And I know there's those people that think it's just a clinical thing having to do with being the body being stuck in that state of deep sleep, but the mind not. Because apparently when we sleep, there's a certain chemical released that paralyzes the body so that when you're dreaming of like running, you don't actually get out of bed and run because, you know, it could kill you. So there's some people that believe that that is the entirety of the whole sleep paralysis type of phenomena. However, there are others, and myself included, not saying that that other can't and doesn't happen. I'm sure it does, but I can't believe that every incident of this is just covered by that. I've had experiences with sleep paralysis that took place over, God, it was a long, long period of time, perhaps over the course of a year or two, where I was constantly having to deal with this very thing, and I had to learn how to fight out of it. And it's horrible. It's just a horrible, helpless feeling. But I did learn how to, at least so far. It hasn't come back, so I assume I got on top of that one. But I had heard from another story that we read not long ago, maybe a month or two ago, maybe 2 months, 3 months. I can't remember exactly when, but we were talking about this very thing. And what was going on was this, it was actually the old hag. The person saw the old hag, but apparently their family had told them, if you ever see the old hag, grab onto another person because they can't make you, you know, lock you into that state any longer because there's two energies involved. And so that contact with another person confuses the energy and the hag, wraith, whatever that is, can't prey upon the person that's holding another person. And this person saw the old hag and reached over and jumped into their brother's bed and held on and didn't have the paralysis. And then it left and never came back. I had never heard that before, but I thought that was really interesting. But now in this story, this person is saying they definitely held on to another person and it didn't seem to matter. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that, I guess. But very curious. Very curious for sure. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. I love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to smile and laugh as much as you're able.
Testing is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.